I even love baseball.
I see great things in baseball.
The Marlins Hot Stove with Kyle Seeloff is on 1230 The Zone and 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Tuesday, January 30th, a little bit earlier tonight, but this is the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Brought to you by Geico. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's wheelhouse for over 75 years. So after the game, get a quote at geico.com. Geico is so easy, a caveman can do it. Great to be back for another week. Just two shows left after tonight. Back to normal next week, by the way, at 7 o'clock. And then myself and Glenn Geffner join you next Saturday for a two-hour special live from Marlins Park as the Marlins get ready to hold their annual Fan Fest from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on February 10th at Marlins Park. Now, big news since we last joined you. The Marlins last Thursday announced that the team had acquired outfielder Lewis Brinson, infielder Isan Diaz, outfielder Monty Harrison, and right-handed pitcher Jordan Yamamoto from the Milwaukee Brewers in exchange for outfielder Christian Yelich. That announcement was made by the Marlins' president of baseball operations, Michael Hill, who we will hear from shortly. Brinson was the consensus top prospect in Milwaukee's system by both MILB.com and Baseball America. He is ranked number 13 in all of baseball by MILB.com and number 18 by Baseball America. Diaz was the number 6 prospect in the Brewers system, and he was ranked 86th overall by MILB.com. He is the 4th best second baseman in the country, and he was Milwaukee's number 14 overall prospect. So a lot to discuss on that front. So what do you say we kick off tonight's show with one of my favorite reoccurring guests joining us over the phone tonight, MLB.com, Marlins.com, beat writer Joe Fusaro. Hey, Joe, always a pleasure. There is much to discuss. Let's start with last Thursday's trade that sent Christian Yelich to Milwaukee in exchange for some top-notch prospects. What do you make of the move, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, that was the big deal. You know, there was all that talk about, getting the, an overpay and completely elite players in this trade. And they got 2, 3, maybe even 4, because Monty Harrison is another one who is very highly regarded. MLB Pipeline had Harrison in the top 100 as well. So, Brinson's obviously the centerpiece of this one. And even the pitcher, what Jordan Yamamoto, might profile as a number 3 type starter. And from what I heard, since gathered, the Brewers are really reluctant to get him in the trade. And I can tell you this, Kyle, throughout all this, and as unpopular it is to move popular and productive players like Yelich and so forth, the Marlins really did their homework on the teams they're doing business with, more so than ever before. They know layers of these guys, the other teams' minor league systems. And I think, keep an eye on Yamamoto, keep an eye on Harrison, Diaz, and Brinson, if this was a 30 home run, 30 steals type of guy, is a premier all-star caliber center fielder, outfielder. You know, the Marlins right now, what I like about the trade also is a lot of athletes. You know, Harrison's a 3-star sports star in high school. MLB.com put a little together some videos of him, and so I encourage people to look at it. This guy's doing 360 dunks. He's running over people on the football field, and obviously his power is astonishing. So that's another guy that don't sleep on him. But obviously the cost is Christian Yelich, a homegrown Marlin, one of the most popular players on the team. A guy who's just reaching his prime, but, the reasons why this has happened have been well stated. You know, the team didn't feel they were close. They don't have the organizational depth, or didn't, and that organizational depth is starting to fill up.
Brinson, the centerpiece of that trade, Joe, do you think he plays a prominent role in the major leagues this season?
Yes. I mean, he's 23. I believe he'll turn 24 sometime during the season. The question I have, and I think we're all going to be looking at in spring training, is he going to be ready for opening day? And I anticipate now, it's been a slow free agent market. I think the Marlins are still going to be looking for outfielders that could come in and bide some time for guys like Brinson, Sierra, and others. Brinson is really close. Obviously, he was called up two different stints with the Brewers last year. There's really no reason to rush these guys. Mm-hmm. But I also think by the second half of the year, I'm wanting Lewis Brinson to, get his at-bats in the big league. I mean, obviously want to keep the service time down as much as possible because you want to be here as long as possible. And if your mission is more to build up rather than, you know, being on the cusp of going into the playoffs and deep into the playoffs, then you want to protect that service time. But I also want to see him also learn at the big league level. I think the Phillies last year kind of missed an opportunity with some of their real top young prospects that kept them the full year. I think there is something to be said about learning in the big leagues and taking your lumps and figuring things out at the big league level.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, the Marlins have got some pitching this winter. They got Diaz, the second baseman. He's a versatile infielder. You know, immediately I start to think about the outfield, Joe, and the Marlins' vision over the course of the next couple of years. And I mean, that vision, to an extent, could come to fruition a little bit this season alone in the outfield if Brinson and Sierra are out there patrolling things, right?
No question. No question. And you know, obviously there's talks about JT Realmuto, and the Marlins are really holding tight, wanting Victor Robles from the Nationals, who's a top 10 in baseball prospect and the Nationals' number one prospect, who is like Brinson, really knocking on the door to being ready for the big leagues. So, you know, they still may not be done. And, yeah, I mean, if you're asking me right now on, you know, the last day of January, you know, who the Marlins outfield is going to be, we still don't completely know the opening day outfield because, you know, that still could be a work in progress. But the outfielders of the future, we're starting to see some names. And don't forget, there's some names that have already been brought in, you know, in past trades that they've made and through the draft. You know, when I look at the top 30 and top 40 prospects the Marlins have, this is the most excited I've been in years. I mean, this organization just haven't had any since pretty much Jose and then JT, you know, getting called up in terms of, and JT wasn't a top prospect. He happened to be, you know, in the Marlins system he was, but not, you know, looked at by the industry. But, you know, you're starting to see some very exciting players. I mean, there's two, three guys in the minors that are going to be throwing 100 miles an hour. I mean, this is with, you know, top of the rotation stuff. And then I think one thing a point I want to make here, Kyle, while we're doing this tonight, is remember when Jeter said there was a plan and the build from the bottom up?
Yep.
Obviously, that's kind of been the mission.
Yep.
Look at some of these trades. They didn't just get AAA guys or AA guys or A-ball guys. They got virtually through all these trades players that are infused at various levels. You got the Devers, as part of the Stanton trade.
Mm-hmm.
Remember him, the infielder who's Rafael Devers' cousin from the Red Sox. As part of the Stanton trade, he's like a low A ball, middle of the infield type guy with power potential. Then you got, you know, Brinson at worst is going to be on New Orleans. You know, so you're I'm seeing players come into this system at all levels, which is going to be really interesting for Marlins fans to pay attention to. The records, we'll know right away as we see spring training and then getting into the minor league season, especially. If you start seeing those wins popping up at A ball, low A,
yep,
up into Jupiter, up into Jacksonville, and then the Triple A, then you know something. Yeah, obviously the wins may not be in abundance at the big league level in 2018, but, you know, we're going to see how that plays out. That's, you know, Donnie and the development and whatever else they can bring in. But I think that's what I'm going to kind of be paying a lot of attention to, these minor league records, the culture, the prospects, how they're being used, what positions they're playing. And I'm also very curious to see Gary Denbo's imprint with hitting. You know, that guy is a hitting guru. He has a way of bringing out the best in hitters. And is he the type of guy that's going to get to Brinson early and really work on reducing that, you know, swing and miss rate? And if he does, you're looking at an all-star player.
MLB.com, Marlins.com, beat reporter Joe Fusaro joins us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. Joe, you alluded to it. What's the latest in regards to JT Realmuto? What are you hearing? Do you think he gets dealt as well?
It just seems to be a matter of time, Kyle. I'm not sure that time is imminent. Mm-hmm. It may be, during the season. It may be after the season. It may be not at all. Maybe he buys in and wants to be part of it, you know, so, and they look for an extension at some point. But I can tell you this. The team that seems to be the most aggressive for him are the Washington Nationals. And I can tell you this, the Marlins will insist on Victor Robles being in that trade. The Nationals at all costs do not want that to happen. And, you know, they want to move him for, you know, their number three and four prospects. Marlins aren't going to do that. And the thing is the Nationals are the ones trying to get to the World Series.
Right. Well,
so, you know, which is the team that's going to blink? And I think that over the course of the year, you're going to start seeing some stuff happening. As painful as it would be to lose JT for all he brings to the table, it's going to be a distraction. There's no question. The questions are going to be constantly asked. But the difference between JT and Yelich is, while JT has expressed not wanting to be the last man standing, Yelich, you know, his agent made it very clear that it could get very ugly if he showed up to camp. And, you know, that's how that kind of accelerated faster than the Marlins may have even been thinking of that happening.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but as the season wears on, I bet the Washington Nationals start to reconsider things for Robles, for Realmuto straight up, if they think they're a catcher and a JT Realmuto away from reaching the World Series, no?
Oh, I agree. I agree. But then you're going to see, you know, is it going to be more? You know, they, Brinson for Yelich, and some people have thought, but, you know, the Marlins got more.
Yep.
You know, they're in position for the overpay. Obviously, you don't want to, you know, aim too high and miss out and get nothing. But there's a lot of teams in. And, you know, I think if JT comes in and does what he's supposed to do and what I expect him to do, it'd be a real pro, perform. That's the best thing that could happen for him. That's the best thing. If Starlin Castro isn't part of the future, the best thing for him is to come in and perform, because you just can't just say, Yelich is a little different situation, but you just can't, at the Starlin Castro's or some of these other guys, say, I want to be on a contender. You've got to perform, because the contenders have other options as well. So, but to answer the Realmuto question, it's literally anyone's guess, and I think it's as simple as the offer. You know, if there is a genuine offer, made, the Marlins would not hesitate making that trade for JT.
What other teams out there do you think are linked to him to an extent? I mean, look, JT Realmuto is a guy that's going to garner a lot, and he deserves to be traded for a top prospect in somebody else's organization.
Yeah, and I think Arizona is a potential there, too. I mean, their one catcher, just in mind, Arizona went to the playoffs, of course, last year. The one catcher they have on their 40-man roster is Jeff Mathis.
Yeah.
You think Jeff Mathis isn't sitting around going, hey, guys, you know, I was with this guy in Miami, and this guy could help us get close to the Dodgers, and, you know, and the Giants are trying to make some noise as well, and Colorado was a playoff team last year as well. So, you know, I think you're going to see some of those teams, like, you know, don't sleep on them. Again, no, it's going to come down to, does Arizona have enough in the system? You know, just looking at their system, it doesn't appear they do. But, you know, that's why there's really – this is kind of a wait and see. And you never know what an injury situation might happen. Or, you know, there's pretty much five teams that are happy with their catching situation.
Hey, what's the – Joe, sorry about that. What's the latest with Starlin Castro? Haven't heard much on that front.
I just think it's quieted. You know, I think the player expressed, and you know, he'll come to camp and they'll do what they do. And you know how spring is. Somebody may lose a second baseman. But, you know, the Marlins are going to need to field the team at some point as well. So – I would hope that Mattingly and Ozalise or Michael Hill have been reaching out to the Castros, to JT, and say, look, you know, be a good soldier. You know, show up to camp. Don't ruffle any feathers. When you're asked the questions, answer it diplomatically and don't sabotage the clubhouse. And show that, you know, you're a good teammate and good things can happen. I kind of bring this up, Kyle. Remember in 13, as painful it was when they traded away Reyes and Hanley, and, you know, after that season, they completely cleaned it out. The one, keep in mind, the one pitcher they kept that year to go into 13 was Ricky Nolasco.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky Nolasco didn't say boo. He didn't whine about it. He didn't complain. He sat there. Remember, Jose was a rookie at the time. Mm-hmm. He came up. He was the fifth starter. And about midseason, it was clear Jose was the talent on the staff and ready to assume being an ace. And Ricky just performed to his ability and was a good soldier. Ricky got traded. The Marlins accommodated him with a trade to the Los Angeles Dodgers, his hometown team, and he went to the playoffs. You know, so there is a reward that the players in an uncomfortable situation can, you know, if you make the best of a bad situation, you could be rewarded as well as the team being rewarded. You know, they're different paths, you know. That's why I always bring up what Nolasco did to not get that lost on people, that Ricky was really, you know, a guy who deserved a lot of credit for the way he handled himself in a year that they lost 100 games.
Hey, got a couple of more minutes with Marlins.com beat reporter Joe Fusaro here on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Hey, we are just 15 days out from the start of spring training. Pitchers and catchers report on the 14th of February, position players on the 19th. The first Grapefruit League game will be on the 23rd. Joe, your biggest question marks headed into spring training are what?
Oh, boy. Yeah, there's still so many because really the outfield, how that's going to shape up. You know, my biggest question marks are who's going to be the closer? You know, I think Ziegler is the guy that, you know, people are assuming just based on, you know, the fact that he's done it. But, you know, clearly there's guys with strong arms and really good high-end stuff back there that can take over the role. I know people immediately will probably say Barraclough. I think, you know, Steckenrider may be the closer, not opening day by midseason. So I'm curious to see how closer plays out. The back end of the rotation, you know, how are they, you know, and I think it's going to come down to the wire too, Kyle. And I think even who goes into spring training compared to opening day, you could literally see four different players in the starting lineup than anyone even thinks about because, you know, they may not be on the roster. But maybe I'll give you even a better one. To me, my biggest question mark, if we were looking at how roster's constructed on the expectation, shortstop. Mm-hmm. I am very concerned about shortstop because JT Riddle had shoulder surgery and, you know, and Miguel Rojas dealt with shoulder issues and had the broken hand last year. You had two shortstops, you know, basically that really were reluctant to dive because if they dove, they could pop their shoulders out.
Right.
I really thought this offseason we would have seen them acquire a big league, you know, like a prospect shortstop, and maybe some of them are in the system. But, you know, that's a position I thought that was going to be addressed a little bit differently. But the way things have played out, you know, they're kind of patching it together, but I still don't know if we have the shortstop of the future as a Marlin right now.
Could Castro go play short?
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't make him uncomfortable. And, yes, obviously he played it early in his career. But if my best trade value for him is second base, but could be a question for Perry Hill. You know.
Hey, Joe, very honest question here, and it's one that I really have not heard answered, and I am uber excited about the talent that the Marlins have acquired this winter. Bottom line is that a lot of these guys will be in the minor leagues, and we'll have to watch them from afar. How competitive do you think the major league team will be in 2018?
It's really hard to say because if you're looking at what we've just seen and the players being brought in, we're heading into February not knowing who the starting outfield is going to be. It might be Braxton Lee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you literally are having guys who have played minimal to no games in the big league.
Yep.
So I would hope that would be a bit of a priority because you don't really want to – I get it. If you lose 100 or 95, is it really that big of a deal? I think what can save them is I think so many teams are rebuilding, so it's not like – they're automatically going to get stepped on by everybody in the division, you know, and they're going to win their share of games here and there. But in terms of competitive to be a contender, it looks like it could be pretty ugly right now based on, you know, the fact that we just don't see the, you know, somebody that you absolutely know is going to be here. Now, if they went out and got, let's say, Jose Bautista, who hit 20-some homers in Toronto last year, on a 1-year deal and even try to flip him at the deadline. Yeah, he might help you win some more in the first half. You know, you and I think that's what makes this so fascinating how the rest of the offseason played out is so many, you know, players are going to be looking for jobs and the Marlins are going to provide it, you know, because the Marlins will say, yeah, we'll take you. $2 million for 1 year. Yeah, okay, we could squeeze you in at that, you know, and if you do anything, we could get you to a playoff contender by the break. You know, or you have a good year, you know, and sign somewhere next year. So still so many unanswered questions about the big league roster. You know, you don't really, that's not the most comfortable situation you want to be in
right.
2 weeks, you know, before spring training opens. But, you know, it's the reality that, you know, if you're finishing at 100 losses or 95 or 90 losses or winning 60 to 70 games, it really, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't matter too much.
Well, that's true. And I would also say, Joe, the reality of the situation, too, is let's say the first couple of months don't go well, but some of these kids in the minor league system really start to perform. I mean, folks and fans of this team could seriously get excited throughout the course of the summer if Brinson is up there, if Sierra's up there, if Alcantara is taking the ball every fifth day. I don't know, maybe a Braxton Lee makes a ginormous leap this year. I mean, at some point this year, we could see a lot of Marlins prospects getting some serious major league service time.
No question. No question, Kyle. And, you know, if you really look at the way this team has been, you know, since 2013 in terms of what the fan, and I get it. I get all the frustration and, I get worn out getting all the backlash on it, but I get it. I'm a season ticket holder. My family is season ticket holders. Mm-hmm. It's not pleasant to not, you know, have a winning or contending team. But to be totally honest, if you look at all these seasons we've had in the last since 2013, let's say, 2013, we're excited because Jose Fernandez was a promising rookie, won Rookie of the Year. The team lost 100 games. Mm-hmm. 14, Stanton led the National League in homers, was having an NL MVP type year, gets hit in the face, but Yelich kind of came into the fold. He looked like he was good. 15, D. Gordon wins the batting title. 16, again, it was Jose, you know, being an all-star and performing at a great level, you know, for being a Cy Young type candidate. And then 17 was Stanton chasing 60. And Ozuna come into his own. There's always just been snapshots of player performance. So that's all we've cheered for, you know, since 12, 13.
Yep.
You know, the few guys that have made the summer worthwhile, and, you know, the team success wasn't there. And clearly you can see that the culture being built here is kind of be no nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be our way or the highway. That's been very clear. And you have Derek Jeter just with this approach. So I'm expecting to see a team that's going to, you know, have to play hard, going to be hustling like crazy. It's going to be all business. And I'm very curious to see, because from what I understand, Gary Dembo on a backfield is as intense as Bill Belichick on the sidelines for the Super Bowl. You know, he will be watching every little thing. He's basically don't approach. That's what I'm hearing. And he won't miss a thing, and he'll be evaluating. And the players here are going to be in a very structured system, and it's going to be them against the world because no one believes they're going to do anything. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they respond to that and if that starts, you know, bearing some fruit. So, you know, I think as you look at the season, progress would kind of be the word.
Mm-hmm.
You're just looking for progress.
Mm-hmm.
And if progress translates to, you know, 10 more wins than people thought, so be it, you know. But at the end of the day, the reason why they're there, and many disagree, many do agree, that in my opinion, and the opinion obviously of this front office and new ownership, was you had about 8 or 10 really elite players and very little underneath it. And in today's baseball, this isn't the NBA where if you get LeBron, you go to the finals. You need player after player. And that's kind of what they're doing right now.
Well, there's a lot of examples from prior years, Cubs, Astros, Indians, you name it. Hey, I know my opinion doesn't matter much on this, Joe, but I'm really excited about what they're doing and the direction they're headed, and I know it's going to pay off in years to come. But as always, Joe, we absolutely appreciate the time. You're always a pleasure to chat with, and we will see you up in spring training in Jupiter in just a couple of weeks. Thanks so much again for the time tonight.
Kyle, anytime. Have a good one.
Hey, always great to have Joe Fusaro with us, and again, provide us with all the latest news and information as it pertains to the Marlins. Time for our first break tonight, but stay with us because when we return, we'll hear from the Marlins' president of baseball operations, Michael Hill, after last week's trade, in addition to the newest top prospect in the organization. That's Lewis Brinson, who says he's always wanted to be a Marlin. Stay with us. That's next on your home for Marlins baseball, 1230 WBZT, The Zone, and 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Baseball's hot stove season is here. The Marlins' Kyle Seelock is on 1230 The Zone and 940 Wins.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first base.
Who?
The guy playing
first. Who is on first?
Miami Sports.
Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Brought to you by Geico. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's wheelhouse for over 75 years. So after the game, get a quote at Geico.com. Geico, so easy a caveman can do it. Good to be back with you for another week. Thank you to Joe Fusaro for joining us at the top of the show this evening. It is time now to turn our attention to the big trade last Thursday That's former center fielder Christian Yelich traded to the Milwaukee Brewers in exchange for outfielder Lewis Brinson, infielder Isan Diaz, outfielder Monty Harrison, and right-handed pitcher Jordan Yamamoto. Lewis Brinson, he does highlight that trade. He is now the top prospect in the Marlins organization. Let's hear from Marlins president of baseball operations, Michael Hill, who had this to say when asked how quickly this deal came together.
I would say it's been a process. I think as the offseason has gone on and we've looked at every opportunity for us to continue to improve this organization and add depth and add talent, we were very thorough and we didn't want to do anything that we didn't think made us better in the long run. And I think, Milwaukee's a club that expressed interest in Christian early on, in the off season. But, I think we weren't able to get to a deal that worked for both of us. And until today.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Marlins have acquired a lot of talent in this deal. Brinson was the consensus top prospect in Milwaukee's system by both MILB.com and Baseball America. He is ranked number 13 in all of baseball, number 18 by Baseball America. Diaz was the number 6 prospect in the Brewers' system. He is ranked 86th overall. He's the 4th best second baseman in the minor leagues. And Monty Harrison was Milwaukee's number 14 overall prospect, according to MILB.com. But when we were chatting with Joe Fusaro, you heard it, and you can go check out these videos. He might be just one of the best athletes at this point in the system. He was a standout basketball player and football player in high school. The Marlins starting to acquire a lot of talent and really fill out their minor league system. They've done so with other deals this winter, too, but Michael Hill was also asked about the thought process behind the decision. As you can imagine, it's never easy parting ways with one of your star players.
I think our goal is always to make a deal that makes sense for us and to add quality. I think in this transaction, we've added 3 impactful position players in Brinson, Diaz, and Harrison, and added a middle rotation starter in Yamamoto. And I think it continues with the theme of adding as much talent to our organization.
Well, that process has certainly already begun. Half of the Marlins' current top 30 prospects, according to MLB Pipeline, have been acquired in trades alone in the past year. He'll also discuss the type of impact these type of caliber players can bring to an organization.
I think, we added 3 impactful position players, Brinson, Diaz, and Harrison. And I think, you look at the deals that we've been able to make and to add the pitching, which we obviously needed and that you never have enough of. We felt like we added impactful championship caliber players and players that will be part of future Marlin championships as they reach the big leagues and allow us to, bring a championship back to South Florida.
Well, many moves have been made this winter, but the Marlins have certainly started to build a prosperous minor league system. Let's hear now from Lewis Brinson. He joined the local media on a conference call last week. He's 23 years old. He's a native of Fort Lauderdale. He attended Coral Springs High School in 545 career minor league games. He batted .287 with 133 doubles, 29 triples, 89 home runs. He does have some pop. He had 322 runs batted in, 96 steals. He had a .353 OBP, and he slugged .502. He did make his major league debut on June 11th of last year. He appeared in 21 games across 2 stints with the Brewers. He was taken 29th overall by Texas in the 2012 first-year player draft. He was then acquired by Milwaukee at the 2016 trade deadline. He has been added to Miami's 40-man roster, and as you can imagine, a 23-year-old Fort Lauderdale native is quite happy to be back home playing for his hometown team.
Oh, it's very exciting playing for my hometown team. I'm super excited. My family is. My mother is watching me grow up. My mom watched me grow up a Marlins fan, huge Marlins fan, and all the papers I was writing in school was you know, my dream was to play in the big leagues, and it was, at the time, was to play for the Florida Marlins. And to get that opportunity now is just like, you know, it's just absolutely crazy that all comes before. And, you know, that's, you know, reality right now. It's kind of crazy and surreal. And just watching, growing up watching the Marlins, you know, particularly remember that 2003 team with Juan Pierre, which I idolize to this day, you know, Pudge Rodriguez, Derek Lee, Encarnacion, all those guys, Jeff Conine, all those guys growing up and going to the old Marlins Park and watching them play was, you know, was awesome. I would look forward to doing that all the time. So to get to play for my hometown team is just, I can't tell you guys how excited I am.
Well, that's an excited young man, and Brinson said this has been a dream of his ever since he was a small kid in school. Now, he found a way to keep up his grades, but most assignments revolved around one thing, and that was to one day be a Miami Marlin.
Well, first, I was an AB student. I think I graduated with 3.5, so I'm good on that department in high school. But, in elementary school, middle school, anytime I had to write papers on, you know, what you wanted to be when you grew up, you know how, you know, in elementary school, you write those papers on, you know, what job you want to have and what kind of career you want to have. And mine always was to play Major League Baseball for the Florida Marlins. And I think my mom might have proof at home if she keeps all my papers in her little booklet at home. But I'd come home all the time and, you know, get A's on those papers because, you know, I just, like, poured it out on those papers that I would love to play for the Florida Marlins, playing, you know, Big League Baseball for them, going to their games, you know. Couldn't wait to go to the game when my mom would surprise me with tickets. Going to Pro Player Stadium. At the time, I was super, super excited to go to games. So I was super, super excited, you know, when I got the opportunity to, you know, play for my hometown team. I'll try to get those papers for you guys.
Well, a dream come true indeed. It's going to be a whole heck of a lot of fun to see what he can do in a Marlins uniform. Now, Brinson, again, he did make his Major League debut June 11th of last year. He appeared in 21 games and 2 stints with the Brewers. He has been added to Miami's 40-man roster, and he was asked what he learned from his first taste in the big leagues in 2017.
I learned a lot. Learned how to be routine-oriented. Learned to stay within myself and not get ahead of myself and try to do too much. Just telling myself that I belong in the big leagues. And, you know, it's tough up there. You know, guys make adjustments. There's cameras. There's, you know, video on you from the moment you step on the field. So, you know, guys have an edge on you already by watching video. But, you know, you just got to stick to your guts and, stick to your plan up there. I definitely learned to, stick within myself and just play within myself, have fun. Definitely my second time going up there, I told myself I was going to have a lot more fun and just play a kid's game, which, you know, that's what I'm playing. I've always been playing is a kid's game, and that's probably the biggest thing helped me mentally and physically, just to go out there and have fun and play my game.
Well, we'll see how Brinson fares. Did mention that he had 2 stints with the Brewers last season. He appeared in 21 games, but he was just 5 of 47. He had 55 plate appearances, 47 at-bats. He hit 106. He had a triple, he had 2 home runs, and he had 3 RBIs. But this is a very, very confident young man that says he is ready, no doubt about it, to be an everyday major leaguer if given the opportunity.
Absolutely. I think I'm more than ready, especially after last year getting a little taste. I think I'm more than ready to contribute to a big league team. Hopefully the Marlins give me that opportunity. I've been training all offseason, and, I'm ready to go. And ready to travel 30 minutes away from where I've been training. That's probably the biggest thing. I can go up to Jupiter whenever, and it's not really a big-time drive for me. But I think I'm more than ready to take over that spot. You know, if the Marlins see fit, hopefully they do. And, you know, I plan on showing them in spring that I'm ready to take over that spot and, contribute to the team right away.
Well, we will see if he gets that opportunity. He is going to have a chance in spring training to make the big league club, the 25
man roster coming out of camp. That's going to be a lot of fun, so make sure you come and join us at Jupiter. Hey, don't forget, the Marlins have announced the 2018 Fan Fest lineup Saturday, February 10th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. It is free, open to the public at Marlins Park. It'll have a myriad of activities for the entire family that includes player and alumni autograph sessions, the chance to play catch on the field, photo opportunities, kids' activities. They'll have a steel home challenge, a diamond dash, culinary tastings from local food trucks, and fans who purchase season tickets on site will receive a fast pass to player autographs and the opportunity for a private experience on the field at Marlins Park that day. In regards to season tickets, they are available now, and you can go to marlins.com or you can give the folks a call. If you're interested in the full season or just a handful of games, the Marlins do have a season ticket option that will fit your needs. If you want to learn more about those flexible season ticket plans, how you can secure a spot in the action, go ahead and visit marlins.com/season tickets. Again, marlins.com/season tickets, or you can just dial them up at 305-MARLINS, and they will be happy to help you. We'll take another break. When we come back, you may have read it in the news last week, and it's been a hot topic around Major League Baseball, and it's fan safety. The Marlins have elected to put netting down the first and third base lines, and Claude DeLorme, the Executive Vice President of Operations and Events of the Marlins at Marlins Park, joins us next to talk about a variety of topics. That'll certainly be a pointed topic, so stay with us next on your home for Marlins Baseball, 1230 WBZT The Zone and 940 Winds Miami Sports.
Keep your hands on the hot stove with the Miami Marlins' Kyle Seeloff. 1230 The Zone and 940 Winds Miami Sports.
Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, brought to you by Geico. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's wheelhouse for over 75 years. So after the game, get a quote at geico.com. Geico, so easy a caveman can do it. Thanks to Joe Fusaro for joining us tonight. You've heard from Michael Hill and Lewis Brinson following last week's trade with the Milwaukee Brewers. Right now, we turn our attention to a little housekeeping down at Marlins Park. Joining us over the phone this evening is the Marlins Executive Vice President of Operations and Events, Claude DeLorme. Claude, it is great to have you with us. The Marlins announced last week that the netting behind home plate will expand at Marlins Park in 2018. It has been a hot topic around Major League Baseball. Many teams electing to do this out of fan safety. If you would, and thank you for joining us again this evening, can you give us a little insight on the Marlins' decision to go this route and what went into that thought process?
Yeah, Kyle, it's something that we've been talking about for a few years now and looking at different options. And yeah, very pleased that we're moving forward. You know, we talk about fan safety and the importance of making sure our fans are safe at all times. The one thing we've noticed over the past few years, you know, ballparks are being built closer and closer, and it seems like we're seeing more bats leave the hands of the hitters and more check swings, having, you know, pitchers throw at 95 and 100 miles an hour. So a lot of the teams have moved forward. You know, we had the incident in New York last year, and I think a lot of people reviewed their policy and have decided to move forward. And certainly very pleased that, you know, that will be in place prior to our exhibition game with UM on March 27th and the home opener on March 29th. But we are basically continuing the same height of the netting that's behind home plate,
okay,
down the first and third baseline, and it will start to extend at a 45-degree angle as we reach the end of the camera bays. So anyone that's down the first and third baseline, you know, where the dugouts are, will be fully protected at all times. And I know for families and people that are on their phones, they, you know, the social media is such an important factor now when people go to sports events, that it's going to make us all more comfortable knowing that our fans are protected.
Claude, to my understanding, that the transparency of this netting is spectacular, and for folks sitting in these seats that may feel as if they will be impeded by this netting, that really won't be the case. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's been some nice evolution in the last few years in terms of the netting, and baseball has studied this as well since the first nets have been installed. So this is a knotless net. It's manufactured by a company called Dyneema, and it's going to be four screens that matches the color of our, you know, very close to the color of our grass. And so
when you're sitting in the rows behind, it quickly disappears on you. We actually installed it in Jupiter a few years ago, and it was in the Nautilus, but you know, when we first did it, we did it just prior to a spring training a few years ago, and the fans' response was extremely positive. And you know, you're always concerned, season ticket holders are used to the proximity and whatnot, but the response has been nothing short of extremely positive all the way through. And based on our conversations with other teams that have moved forward in this area, season ticket holders and fans have responded very well to the change in those respective cities.
Executive Vice President of Operations and Events at Marlins Park, Claude Delorme, joins us over the phone on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Claude, I do think it's worth mentioning, too, that this is not just something the Marlins are doing. Many other teams throughout the league are doing it. Could you elaborate for us a little bit on your discussions with Major League Baseball, just how important this is moving forward to take care of the fans? Again, everybody sits on their phones during games. You cannot fault them. It's just the way in which we're moving in society and you know, technologically advancing, but players are getting bigger, faster, and stronger. Fans are closer to the field than ever. It is important that they are protected by some netting, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen too many close plays, even at Marlins Park, where there's a check swing or, you know, a baseball bat leaves the hands of the hitter. And I remember one game specifically, the father was there with his son and daughter, and it was the ninth inning, and Giancarlo was at bat. The bat cracked in half, and the father was trying to follow the baseball, and all of a sudden the bat hit him right in the neck area. And thank God the individual was safe, but if that would have hit one of the children, the consequences would have been much more significant. So you know, it's not worth waiting for an incident. We saw what happened in Boston, what happened in New York the last few years. So most of the teams have been very responsive. I think the last count that I'm aware of, 26 of the 30 teams have confirmed their decision to proceed with the netting by the beginning of the season, including the teams that did it the last few years. And my understanding is that basically every team will be extending the netting prior to the start of the 18 season. So baseball was concerned, and I think the ownership as well realized that fan safety is our number one priority. And, you know, I think by doing this, I think the fans can fully enjoy the game knowing that they're protected with their family and friends.
Yeah, look, bottom line is it's something that needs to be done. It has needed to be done, and it is much better to be proactive instead of reactive. We have Claude Delorme on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. Hey, Claude, switching gears a little bit, we got two big events coming up in Marlins Park. Let's start with Fan Fest on February 10th from 11 a.m. To 3 p.m. at Marlins Park. It is open, it is free to the public, and it's always a great event every single year, so we look forward to having folks at the ballpark.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun event. And again, people can, there's lots of activation in the West Plaza. The field will be accessible as well. There will be some activation on the field and the promenade, autographs, and just an opportunity to get to transition to our season and to launch of our ticket sales as well. So looking forward to that. And certainly, you know, we know spring training follows quickly thereafter. First game of spring training is on March 23rd, so then the regular season with our home opener, a four-game series against the Cubs starting the 29th, and a UM exhibition game 2 days prior on March 27th.
We will have a lot more on Marlins Fan Fest next Tuesday. But Claude, a week after Fan Fest is Monster Jam at Marlins Park on February 17th and February 18th. It's going to be a spectacular event. It is quite the visual event to spectate. Can you tell us a little bit about Monster Jam? And just from your side of things, how much preparation and work will need to be done over the course of 7 days to have these monster trucks inside of Marlins Park?
No, it's going to be, we're very excited with this event. It's a two-day event on February 17th and 18th. So the 17th, it's in the evening, and at 3 p.m. On the 18th. So ticket sales are definitely accelerated in the last week, and I think people will see a lot of advertising for these 2 days. But the team is extremely professional. I was extremely impressed when I went to visit with Feld Entertainment. They hosted this event in several facilities and arenas, and it's been a huge success. So I remember seeing this event for the first time, Kyle, in Montreal, where we hosted it at Olympic Stadium, and it was 50,000 people, for one night, and very interesting. There's an opportunity for the fans to visit in our lot W3, which is the West Lot 3. It's called Pit Pass, and people can pay a premium to stand by the vehicles and see it firsthand and talk to the drivers. And this is pre-event on Saturday and Sunday. And they will start, we will start relocating. We'll take the mound apart. So the mound comes out in five pieces. So we will take that out early in the week. And then the team from Feld Entertainment arrives, and they will start installing a base for the field, and then basically we will start putting the dirt and setting up for the show on Saturday. So this is part of a 5-year agreement that we have with Feld. So it's going to be people in Miami and Fort Lauderdale will get a chance to come out to Marlins Park and see this show firsthand for the next 5 years.
Well, it's going to be a wonderful event, Monster Jam, February 17th and 18th. Folks can go to marlins.com/Monster Jam. A week prior to is Marlins Fan Fest on February 10th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Marlins Park. Claude Delorme, thanks so much for the time. Some terrific insight tonight, and we will chat with you soon. Thanks again.
Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Always nice to chat with Claude Delorme, so thank you for his time. We're up against the clock here. We'll take one more break when we come back. Some sad news around Major League Baseball today. We'll have that for you, so stay with us. That's next on your home for Marlins Baseball, 1230 WBZT, The Zone, and 940 Winds Miami Sports.
Marlins Baseball Hot Stove Talk with Kyle Seeloff is on 1230 The Zone and 940 Winds Miami Sports.
Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, brought to you by Geico. We got about a minute here before we got to get out of the way, but did want to mention, felt it was necessary to mention that longtime baseball executive Kevin Towers passed away today at the age of 56 after battling a rare form of thyroid cancer. Towers was the Padres GM through 2009. San Diego won 4 National League West championships under his tutelage in 96, 98, 05 and 06. They advanced to the World Series in 98 against the Yankees during his tenure. He was the Diamondbacks general manager from 2011 through 2014, and under his guidance, the team went from last place in 2010 to the National League West title in 2011, improving from 65 to 94 wins. So thoughts and prayers to those organizations and the families affected by the passing today of Kevin Towers, who passes away at the age of 56. That's going to do it for another edition of the Marlins Hot Stove Show. We're back next week, same time, 7 o'clock, but the same place. For Roy Perez, our terrific producer, I'm Kyle Seeloff. We're on the way out. We'll see you next week on your home for Marlins Baseball, 940 Winds, Miami Sports.